Hi, everyone. So glad you're with us again for another Campfire Conversation. And hosting this call is, once again, like usual, John Hart is on with us, and Sam Williamson, and myself. And our guest, as you know, if you've read the multiple emails I have sent you, though I'm sure John and Sam have not, but our guest is Jeff.
Sam.
I said Sam.
Sam.
You thought I swore, didn't you? I didn't. I said Sam with an S. Anyway, so we have Jeff Anderson on with us, and he has written his second book that we're going to be talking about called Divine Applause. And Jeff and I met, I'm guessing this was about 6 to 8 months ago, somewhere in there, maybe a year, at Panera Bread. And Jeff was in Colorado Springs. He emailed me. We got together and really enjoyed our time together. And though we had never met before, by the time we were done, honestly, he felt like a brother. And that we have been doing kind of the same thing, trying to influence the kingdom of God and with the message that God has put on our heart. And I just really enjoyed him and continue to enjoy him. So, Jeff, thanks for getting on the call, on the Campfire Conversation with us on this.
Well, thank you for the invitation and for the kind words. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, right off, why don't you give us kind of a synopsis of the book for those who haven't read it yet, and then we'll kind of go into some depth on your book.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Divine Applause is the name of the book. The subtitle is Secrets and Rewards of Walking with an Invisible God, and that's really what the book is about: is what does it look like to walk with a God we can't see. The idea of walking with God is one that I've heard about my whole life growing up in church, but it's always assumed that, you know, we should have a relationship with God, or we should know God, we should walk with God. But really taking the time to say, well, wait a second, we can't see God. How do you walk with a being that you can't see? And so the book unpacks what it really looks like to walk with God in that manner. And the divine applause is this idea that we want to see God seeing us as children, which we are. We want to see the hand of the Father in a way that we recognize His noticing us. And those are divine applause connecting moments that I think we live for.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so let me ask you still an introductory comment here. You know, we all know it takes an awful lot of work to write a book. You had to really think through the subject and work on it and dive deeper and nuance it and that kind of thing. And you were edited and everything else. So let me ask you, what got you in the direction of, you know, this depth of thought and work to actually write this book?
Right. It's kind of interesting because this book was the second book in a two-book contract, and it was supposed to be a follow-up to my first book, which was about financial giving. And I wrote a book called Plastic Donuts that had to do with giving from the perspective of a father who sees us as children, and I relate the story of a plastic donut. But as I began to a plastic donut being a gift from my little girl, that's the storyline there. As I began to write this book, my personal journey began to flow out of it, and I began to really draw upon my experience and my own walk with God. And a big part of my journey is having a father, my earthly father, who was really engaged and really interested and really taking attention to me, and how that shaped my view of God. The way my dad showed love to me shaped how I saw God as a loving, interested, available, watchful God. So that's sort of a backdrop of my life that began to be fleshed out in my writing. And next thing you know, we took this book in a different direction than what we actually contracted for. And fortunately, we had the blessing of the publisher to do it. And that's how this book came about.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was really gracious of them to let you go in a completely different direction. And obviously they saw the value of it. They knew this was a big deal, you know. So one of the things that you said was you said getting a right perspective of God affects how you approach Him. It determines how you live in the areas of your life. And you know, so much of your writing is about this idea of, you know, can you really believe, do you really understand that God really is watching your life, you know, out of love, out of affection, out of joy, not out of a critique of the job description, of the job evaluation that will be coming up soon and you are in danger of losing your job,
right.
but the other way. And I think that's huge because, again, you know, most of us, you know, one of the things that Sam spends a lot of time in with his organization called, you know, Beliefs of the Heart is, you know, why can't we do the things that we want to do? And it comes usually to those kind of things, right? This, as you said, this belief that, you know, God is just, he's watching with a lot of disappointment, that frown on his face as you referred to. I mean, I'm guessing this has been your experience of fighting through that in your own life and seeing this in others.
You know, I have one of those really favorable experiences with parents that were very loving, very nurturing, very interested, very watchful. And like I said, that set the tone for how I viewed God. And as I've interacted with other Christians, I've found just how even those who have been, let's say they walk with God or have a relationship with God in some way as believers, I'm finding them still trying to construct a view of God that is favorable. They still see God as maybe in the way they saw their parents. If they had a dad that didn't notice them, they're not sure God's really paying attention. They believe in God. They believe that he's sovereign. They believe he's eternal, and they're going to spend eternity with him. But it's seeing God, seeing them, or seeing God interested in them is not something they've fully embraced. And so that's why I do spend time early in the book really setting our thinking in how we view God will shape the way we'll walk with him. It starts with the way we see him in our minds.
So in chapter one, you have this great line. You say, we have known these truths since childhood, but sometimes we want more than what the Sunday school answers tell us. So what are those kind of things that you've learned more than just the simple Sunday school answers?
You know,
Go ahead.
Well, no, you have a thought. Would you have a clarifying part you were going to add on a question?
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Either what are the kinds of things that you've learned, or what are the kinds of things that you know people have been dissatisfied with, or the artificialness of the answers. What is it that you've learned?
Well, a couple of things. I relate in chapter one my experience as a young boy that had a hearing loss. I grew up with a hearing loss. I wore hearing aids as a child. I still wear them today. And so all my life, hearing requires some work. Even with hearing aids, I don't hear perfectly. They're not like glasses that give me 20/20 vision. Hearing aids don't give you perfect hearing. And so I have to go out of my way. I have to work a little bit harder to hear. I have to read lips. I have to pay attention to where I sit. I've grown up having to stretch and compensate and work to hear the world around me. And so in the Christian life, I think that maybe that's why this idea of there are things we have to do to connect with God, which is different than, you know, things you have to do to be accepted by God. That's not what we're talking about. But as far as connecting and growing and walking with God, there are some things that he is looking at us to step out and do. When we show that we want more than just the silence, or just more than just the more than what faith alone gives you. And faith's a lot. Faith is everything. Maybe it's I like to say maybe faith is 99% of it, but there's another 1% of me that wants more, that wants some proof, that wants something that's a validating connection, a divine applause. And so that's what I'm talking about is living in a way that's hungry and that chases for more. So you asked the question, well, what's an example of that? And I think that we could talk about that in the context of some of these other chapters. But for example, you've heard books about heaven is for real. A little boy goes to heaven, he comes back, he sees heaven, he tells everybody about it, they write a book about it, they get people excited. There are enough stories out there that try to catalyze or energize people from someone else's experience. But I think deep down we all want our own. We want our own experience. Now, it may not be as radical as a trip to heaven and back, But it's some type of connection or some experience that we can sort of anchor our lives into and build on that as a special moment with God. And there's biblical characters that had all kinds of them. So that's really where I'm going with it.
And part of what you're saying is, as you're saying, we have to do some things. Like you said, we're not earning any love. We're not earning God's affection. But
exactly.
You're saying we have to learn to put on hearing aids. I mean, there's some, you know, God is speaking, but we're not hearing it. You're saying there's some things that we need to do to make ourselves receptive to hearing it or attuned to his voice or something, I think is what you're saying.
It is. And also, some of what I'm doing is bringing some conversation to the really, really obvious. But sometimes the obvious is overlooked. And in this case, the obvious is we can't see God. Well, that's right. We can't see God. Well, it's kind of hard to walk with a God you can't see, right? Yeah, it is. It is hard to walk with a God we can't see. Adam and Eve used to walk with God, didn't they? Yeah, they did. But then something happened and they were separated. So ever since that separation, man has had to, we have had to do some things to enter into, to sort of walk with God. Walking is physical and it's a relationship and it's something that we service as well as God services. That's the idea, is what are the things we do to service that relationship and put our hearing aids on, so to speak, so that we can hear this invisible and mostly inaudible being.
So, Jeff, let me ask you, give us a moment when you are most aware of the applause of God over your life. That, again, that you just had that sense that he was smiling, applauding, laughing in joy over your life. Can you give us like one of those moments where you just remember that so distinctly?
Yeah, you know what? I have found that my life seems to be 99% seeking. 99% seeking and chasing the invisible and the inaudible. And then those rare 1% or 0.5% or whatever it is, moments where God signals his attention, that wink. It could be something as simple as a verse you read in Scripture that matches up with something that someone says to you later that morning, a confirmation of a word check like that. Or it could be an actual something that you pray for very momentarily that God answers right there on the spot in a very special way. Had a lady share with me that, you know, something where she's almost wheelchair bound and she's looking out the window and she's thinking and praying to God and thinking about her day, and she noticed that the turtle doves had not come out yet at this time of the year, and by this time of the year, turtle doves have always shown up. And she's like, you know, God, it would really be neat to see a turtle dove. And then right then a turtle dove shows up. Well, to her, that was a very special connecting moment where she felt God noticing her and noticing her thoughts. And it's a very signature moment for her. And I think that God wants to have those moments with all of us.
So you say, or you talk about a separation from God, seeing normal to Christians, you know,
mm-hmm.
that it's almost like they become used to it. Why do you think that is? Why are modern Christians so used to silence?
The silence of God,
separation?
Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question, because I think part of it is that we don't talk a lot about, we don't set an expectation for wanting more. We don't think about, you know, Jacob going out of his way to, you know, having a dream and wrestling with an angel, or, you know, Moses, you know, on a pursuit to connect with God. We have these stories of David chasing the heart of God. I don't know that we have really taught today and had the freedom to talk about what it looks like to go on a chase to get God, and then to get something, get some type of blessing or some type of connection that inspires other people. And so we all just sort of buy into this mysterious, silent routine of going through the motions and being okay with that, being okay with a one-sided relationship. And so I think part of it is that we just don't know if it's possible. We don't think it's possible. But I think that pursuit is what really engages God's heart when he sees, you know, when the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth, and that's a verse I really key on. The eyes of the Lord range to and fro throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are committed to him. So I used to have this idea of God's eyeballs scanning the earth back and forth and envisioning his eyes setting down on me. And I'm sort of, you know, like I'm sort of performing. Not performing, that's a bad word. I know it's cringy. I don't mean performing to get God's love or to get God's acceptance. But knowing that he's watching and that my obedience matters and that my prayers are being heard, even if I don't hear anything. So it's really a mental change a lot of times.
It's like the kid on the sports team who's playing and then he notices his father watching or his mother watching, and he gets a sort of a bounce in his step or something. He's not performing to earn his parents' favor, but when he sees his parents' gaze, he's energized.
Well, and Sam, with that illustration, I was thinking, you know, if we could get to the point, no, as God gets us to the point where there is just really one person's gaze who we value the highest, which is God's, that would change my life. I mean, of course, I think as a human, you know, I'm going to, a relational being, I want the gaze of a few other people, but boy, I would love to get to that point wholeheartedly, completely, where all I'm really looking for is the gaze and the smile, the applause of God, and everyone else after that would be confirmation and nice, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I think Jesus was really dealing with that in Matthew 6. A lot of times when we talk about, you know, Jesus talked about giving, praying, and fasting and doing it in secret, and we kind of bottle that up as an exercise in, you know, keeping a secret so that other people don't see. But the big truth there that Jesus is saying is when you pray, you need to know that God sees you. He's watching and he hears it. That when you give, you need to know that God saw that moment. He saw that gift. He sees it. He's noticing. He's paying attention. He's interested. And he wants to reward you. And when you fast, even though it feels so lonely and you don't know if it makes a difference, you need to know that God sees that. So I've already been very encouraged to find how people are changing the way they walk, their countenance, kind of like you described, John, just walking with a little more confidence because they feel like that they're just not doing these things in a vacuum, but that that God really is noticing and that he's pleased, and it really changes how you feel about your walk with God.
Right, because when we do these things in public, if we give money in public or if we fast in public, we're really seeking applause for man. And you're saying when we do these in secret, we're seeking the eye of the Father. We're seeking the applause of the Father.
The divine applause, absolutely.
And you know what? I think I was very struck by when we met at Panera before you published this, but you were talking about the whole idea of, you know, the secrets between you and God, you know, doing things, living your life out in such a way that you're happy if it's just a secret between you and God. And that's so countercultural today, especially, you know, in the Christian community and, you know, everything. It seems like everybody can't wait to write a book to tell about their experience or get up on a platform in front of a microphone and tell them their experience. And it feels like that culture, the Christian culture, is saying you need to do this because it will encourage people, it will advance the kingdom. And well, first of all, what I find for most people, that when they do want a platform to tell their story, because of their motive, most of the time it's exaggerated. And if it's exaggerated, it probably comes from a fleshly place. And with those two ingredients, usually it's not encouraging. It actually it encourages more flesh, more arrogance, more self-promotion. And I just love this idea of just, can I walk with God in secret? And there's times when he'll put a spotlight on it, and there's other times when it's no. It's just between you and me, God says. I am really captured by that idea of God saying, Gary, this is between you and me. You don't need to tell anyone else. No one else needs to know.
Yeah, I think it's especially countercultural today with social media. You know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram—they've become tools. They're very helpful tools, and they do serve a purpose of connecting. But Christians squander a lot of their secrets on social media. And I've seen a lot. You know, you'll notice them when you see what we put out there. That some of the things that maybe would have been private moments, a devotion with God, a prayer with God, time with God, is sort of thrown out there as, here's what I'm doing. And even taking pictures of your devotion setting in your coffee shop, and there's even a video out there. If I tell you the name of the video, everybody would go to it and start watching it, and they'd forget that we're on a call. But
yes, they would.
Yeah, so remind me and I'll tell you later. It is so funny. It's hilarious. It's kind of a spoof, but it is a picture of how the things we do as part of the spiritual disciplines or Christian behavior, we now have a tool that can give us an earthly applause, and it's hard to imagine doing things just for God, because everything can be broadcasted.
So I agree with this, and I like this, because you're talking about treasuring the secret connection with God. But just as sort of an aside, and I'm not arguing with you, I'm really asking the genuine question. On one hand, God has secrets with us that are secret. You know, let's not plaster them all over Facebook. On the other hand, you tell me the story of this woman who wanted to see a turtle dove, and a turtle dove comes by, and that's just inspiring. And we need – and in a certain sense, it was a secret moment with God. And it sounds like when she shared it with you, she was not bragging, but she was expressing
right.
a joy. So how
right.
do we – how do we share the secrets with God with other people that encourage and uplift and give hope?
Well, I do – you're exactly right, and I deal with this in the chapter called Secrets, that a lot of our secrets will be used in discipleship to encourage others. Jesus had some secrets that he kept with just the disciples. There's some things he told to the crowds, but then he pulled the disciples away, and he'd share some secrets with them. And then, you know, Peter, James, and John, he gave them even more exposure in more secret moments in the Transfiguration field trip up on the mountain. So, you know, these secrets with God often are used to encourage others, and sometimes we may share them right away. Sometimes we might treasure them for years before we share them. There's a few secrets I share in my book that I sort of just expose the secret. Like here is an experience. I'm going to share it with you as an example. And also say, John, that I think that part of this journey of learning how to treasure secrets with God is that you let some go, and you're like, you know what? That felt cheapened. I didn't get the reaction I thought I'd get. In fact, because they didn't experience what I experienced, they can't appreciate it. I think next time I'm gonna hold it a little closer. So a little trial and error. It's not a rule. It's not an absolute. It's not to say that we should never share anything. But I think that the pendulum has swung so far to where we don't have any secrets. And just to try to – the practice of keeping some secrets is a good move. But not an absolute rule, but just a principle that I think is needed in this day.
So as you're thinking about that principle, would you say – part of this might be a self-examination of your own motives. What am I trying to get when I share this?
Well, that's absolutely what the context of the Matthew 6 is your motive. And and that's always the heart check for us. But I would say that for people on this call and for you three men who are leaders, our most valuable tool for encouraging and discipling others are our stories. So our secrets get – They do get used in a powerful way, and they might and we have to examine our own heart and how we use those. But I think that we've all experienced sharing something that we may have shared something in a prayer group or Sunday school class in a setting, and then we left thinking, you know what, if I could do that over, I'm not sure I'd share that. I think I need to hold on to that a little longer. And sometimes these moments with God's tracking. And if we're journaling these ideas, journaling these thoughts, journaling these experiences, capturing these moments with God, they may circle back around to us in a way that we're rewarded for treasuring that a little bit longer. That makes sense?
Yeah, I think you guys have hit on such an important thing, and that is, I think as we grow in Christ, I think we have to be very engaged with our own heart and understand our heart. Because I find through time, I can start to get a clue, if not understand my motive. So I can think, hey, I want to share this story, and I can start thinking, no, that I was really just hoping people would go, man, that was deep. That was, I want that. As opposed to, this idea of, well, I think this would be helpful if I shared this, but I want to make sure I share it in a way that I'm not telling people, I learned this, you need to learn this, so you can walk like I do. So I think this idea of motive, I think the idea of secrets with God, unless you have that sense that God says, you really need to share this with others because it's going to impact them because it's your life. People are impacted by life stories. So I think you guys are hitting on something that's huge,
Yeah, it's a great topic. It's worth exploring.
Yeah.
So switching gears.
Mm. Okay.
You have a quote in, I think it's chapter 4, where you say, if we live in ways that get God's attention and live each day seeking to connect with God, we are more likely to recognize when he responds. So what are ways that we can live that gets God's attention?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to say something about that phrase, getting God's attention. It's a little rough. I use it a lot, and it can strike people a little odd. But again, the imagery I set up in the book is that we're children, and I think of a child that he knows his daddy's watching, and he thrives on that, and he wants to do something to get daddy to sort of do a double look and kind of, I used the story of Cain and Abel, and when God looked at Abel's gift, it was a gaze. He gazed in and stared. That's the actual word meaning that's used to stare at Abel and to just sort of like gaze and ponder what's going on. So that's what we're talking about, is this precious idea of God's attention being heightened because of things we do. I spend quite a bit of time in the book dealing with the Matthew 6 themes, giving and prayer and fasting, because Jesus used those ideas. So I take the time to really elaborate on how those behaviors, how we can see them differently if we see them in the context of how it catches God's attention. So those are three examples. And fasting is the one that's probably gotten the most attention in the book because it's such an untaught area. But I'm finding there's a hunger for people who want to know more about fasting. When they experience it, they're like, this kind of makes sense. I'm starting to understand fasting better now because I see that it does sort of alert God that this child is going out of his way, out of his routine, to set something aside to connect with me. And so fasting will be an example of something that I think is very relevant to this discussion of living for divine applause.
Well, and I think, just going off of that, I think that sometimes fasting is a way of reminding ourselves that all we really need is God. There is a way that when my stomach growls, mm-hmm. I say, I know that my body is saying I need food, but I also know I can live without food for another day or two or week, and in my case, a month. But but we're saying, but we can't live without God. It is to me almost a physical reminder of I really do need God. As you were saying, it's a way of seeking to connect with God. And I think in those times, I'm more likely to recognize when he responds. To quote you again, we are more likely to recognize when he responds.
And I think that let's use fasting again. Let's stay on that example because it's one of the purest examples of denying yourself something that your body physically needs to live. It doesn't need it every day, three meals a day like we think it does, but food is something that we can't just not take to live. And so the reason a Christian fast is because they think that somehow God notices, that somehow it's worthwhile, that somehow it's going to draw them close to God, somehow it's going to make
right.
a difference in their walk. And so when you take away food, your senses are alerted at a new level, and the ability to recognize God is greater. The ability to the tuning in power of fasting does help you see and recognize God's hand in your life more noticeably. So that's a great example.
Yeah, and you know, Jeff, there's a number of people, you know, those of us on the phone and listening that I try to regularly get some, you know, time away with God every year, you know, a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be once a quarter, it might be once a year, whatever it is. But, you know, we've all done that and experienced, you kind of come back, you know, a little changed after just saying, God, I'm going to get away with you now, just you alone, no one else around me. I just want to be with you. And, you know, I just believe from what I read and what I know of God, he's probably saying, I would love just to be with you, right? No other agenda. It's just you and me. It's one of those times. And I know I often have this inner sense of the smile of God, the applause of God going, this is good. I'm really glad you're doing this. And, of course, I'm always glad after that I've done that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things,
I imagine. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, that's okay.
No, you're finishing. You're doing a thought. Go ahead. I had something else.
Well, I think about when I go upstairs. I have a 7-year-old daughter. She homeschools, my wife homeschools her. So I'll go upstairs and peek around the corner where she can't see me, but I'll see her, and she may be singing. She may be doing what, you know, a sweet little 7-year-old does, and I'm just basking in her presence, just watching her. And occasionally she'll turn her head over and then she'll notice me, and her eyes will catch me, and there will be that connection. And I just think that is the, you know, God is, we are separated from him. We can't see him. That's a curse that came from sin. But for those who are chasing, pursuing, and going out of their way, God is setting up these little connecting moments. And that's what they look like to me. Now that I'm looking for them, they're little moments where I just envision God relishing that moment, just like you described, on a week, on a retreat or a getaway time with God. So that's the image that helps me see God as a father who's watching me go out of my way as a child to try to connect.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, one of the things, one of the guys in base camp was just saying that, yeah, getting God's attention, the Psalms are full of pleas for God to hear us, you know, that very thing. Jeff, one of the quotes, I mean, this is a soundbite. This is a quotable. I'll probably use this. I'll quote you, though. And you said...
he'll quote you the first two times. After that,
then after that, it'll be mine. So it's like squatter's rights, you know what I mean? So, but you said, God is more engaged with us than we realize. He has more bandwidth than we can imagine. He's listening, he's watching, and he's waiting. I love the idea. The metaphor is he has more bandwidth than you realize, because in this day and age, we all know what small bandwidth is like, what it does to us, whether we're streaming a video or we're doing a video conversation like through Skype or something, and we all know what that's like. But I love just the illustration of his bandwidth is bigger than we can imagine. You know, it's a great picture.
Yeah, I think that we recognize there are so many things going on in this world that we would think warrant more attention than what we have going on. There's an earthquake, a devastating earthquake with tremendous amount of pain, and there's ISIS and there's persecution, very real, going on at this very moment somewhere. And often, I know I at times have felt like that my problems they don't really measure up to the problems of the world, and that God surely must be focused in other areas. But the the real mind shift is to believe that he has the bandwidth to hone in on each and every one of us with whatever small or big problem we have. And you know, if we believe that, we begin to step into that and draw on it and just expect more with God. We can't solve the problems of the world. They're just too enormous. But we can still engage with God, and he has room for us.
Right. So, hey, John Hart, you must have a question. We've got about 5 more minutes here, so jump in, my friend.
Well, you know, you brought up that Brad Weber's quote from Psalm 13, and it's the message. It says, "Long enough, God, you've ignored me long enough. I looked at the back of your head long enough." And I love the way the message reads. But I had lunch with a guy yesterday, and that's exactly where he was. He has been through just a lot, a big, heavy, painful ordeal for the last 4 to 6 months. And that is really where he was. Just, where is God in all this? Why doesn't he talk to me? Why doesn't he answer me? How can I find him? And so, Jeff, I'm just curious, how would you have responded to him?
You know, there's a chapter, you know, I talk about the prayer chapter, I think it's chapter 10, where sometimes God is just waiting for us. I know this has happened to me. He has waited for me to get to an absolute breaking point where I'm crying out as a child, just a call out. The tension and the silence and the desperation just builds day after day after day, and it gets stronger, and all of a sudden there's a desperate call out. And I don't remember if this illustration's in the book, but I can remember having one of my own when I was driving through town, and I just began to just yell. I began to scream out in the car, just like I was talking to God, sort of shaking my fist too. I was kind of angry, but it was like, God, I know you know how I feel, and you see me, and I'm just going to let it out, raw emotion right here. And so I encourage people to just do that, to just have that moment, to have that desperate call out to God. And shortly after that experience for me, I had a breakthrough that I was seeking. Now, you know, it could be measured in – a response from God could be measured in weeks, or it could happen that day, or it could happen years later. I don't know. There's no guarantees, and that's the thing. But the real authentic cry out of a child, I think, pleases God, and it's worth something right there. So that's kind of my encouragement, to let it rip, so to speak.
I love what you just said about that it really does please God to hear us, because I know I've used language with God that I couldn't use on this phone. And I really felt like he just was saying, yeah, I understand. I understand. I know.
Yeah. But when you take it to him, that's a gesture that, you know, you could just take it out on the dog, or you could take it out on the kids, you could take it out on the wall, you know, put a hole in the wall. But when you're turning up to God, he sees that. And I think we all are brought to that point, and we just need to be real, real and engage with him that way.
So in your book, Jeff, you say regardless of the path you take, you'll have to take some risks to connect with God in special mm-hmm. ways. Now, is one of those ways just being able to be all of a sudden, in a certain sense, brutally honest with God about where you are with your life? You know, as John was just saying, he sometimes says something to God that he wouldn't say on the phone, but he senses God, the connection with God, God hearing him and listening. So you're saying sometimes we've got to take risks in order to connect with God. What do you mean by that?
Well, in the Bible, the heroes of the faith that really get lifted up, those that were hungry for more, those who didn't accept the status quo of silence, they took risk. David took a big risk. Jesus obviously showed taking risk. Peter stepped out on the water. I like to give Peter credit for that. That's a big risk. The story often goes in another direction, but he took a risk. When we talk about praying and fasting and giving, those three themes, there's risk in there. Each of those cost us. To really stretch financially to give an extravagant gift to God, it takes risk. And so a lot of it's about stepping up the intensity of our walk in a way that might be uncomfortable. You know, I think a lot of us feel guilty that we can't, you know, we're not persecuted today. We don't experience true persecution. And that's just a blessing we have being here in a country where we have freedoms. But there are things we can do to amp up our walk, to take some risk in how we express our worship. And so those are just some examples I use, and it might be a very aggressive financial commitment to God. It could be fasting from food, and it could be there just different ways. It could be taking on a ministry while you've got a job, or taking on a mission, or writing a book, whatever it might be. There's different ways. But I think the encouragement is for us to, if we really believe God's watching and he's noticing and that our actions get his attention, why wouldn't we step up to the plate with a big boy bat and do something aggressive?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Jeff, and we'll wrap this up now. So you got all of you guys final thoughts here. But what I'm drawn to as I'm listening to you is when Paul says, he said, listen, I care very little if I'm judged by you or any human court. He said, indeed, I don't even judge myself. My conscience is clear, but that doesn't make me innocent. It is the Lord who judges me. Therefore, judge nothing before its appointed time. Wait until the Lord comes. He'll bring to light what is hidden, so here's some hidden things, secrets, in darkness, and he'll expose the motives of the heart. And this is what I'm trying to live more with in my life. And at the end of this verse, he says, and at that time, each will receive his praise from God. And I am trying to live with this thought as I'm just trying to walk with God as his son. I want to live with this thought that God is just clapping, saying, way to go, you went for it. You know, you'll do better next time. I'm not disappointed. You know, you didn't know better at this point, but you'll know next time more. And I just, you know, one of the things I put down for this year for me is I won't live with the regret of not trying. And I just thought, you know, I just want to say, God gives me a thought, and I'm pretty sure it's his thought. I'm going to go for it. Of course, I take it through the moral and ethical filter, and just go for it, because I think God is saying, you know what, why don't you just try it, Gary? I put that thought there for a reason. Listen for my applause. I love your picture on your book. I love the title. I love the analogy. I think it's great.
Well, thank you. I'm encouraged. I appreciate that.
Sam, a final thought from you, and Jeff, we'll end with you with any final thought you want to give us. Sam?
So, I'm just going to end with a quote that you have in your chapter 6 where you say, God is interested in you, and he's waiting for you to engage in a real walk with him. I think that that's a terrific picture of our God. I don't think he forces himself on us. It's invitational. But he's interested, and he's waiting on us. You know, he's made the first move. He's made the he's given the invitation, and he's waiting for us. And he really does have an invitation for us to be able to walk and talk with him and be with him. And I love that line you have. Again, I'm going to just read it again because it's so good. God is interested in you, and he's waiting for you to engage in a real walk with him.
John, you have a final thought for us?
I'll just make a quote too, because we didn't bring this quote up, but you say, I challenge you to view God as your father who delights in you as his child. And I just thought that really seems to sum up the whole thing, because it gives us such a perfect perspective to live by if we really see ourselves as the child that is delighted in by the father. I love that.
Okay, so a final thought and a thing. So final thought from me. And that is, you know, I remember years ago a man who mentored me said, and he was already in his 50s at this point, he's in his 70s now, but he said that what he would often do is he would, if he's in a restaurant with his wife and they were eating dinner, and he'd observe this young family, you know, dad and mom are there with a couple kids, and, you know, it's all the stresses of a family. You don't want your kids to be a nuisance to anyone, but you want to enjoy your time, but they're loud or they're moving around, and he would just watch them. And And he would go over before they would leave, and he'd go and put his hand on the father's shoulder, and he'd say, "You are doing a great job as a father. These kids will remember you." And the father, he said so many times that the man would just go into tears. And I was always so impressed by that, because he was just he was saying, you know, I'm going to come over and be the one man that applauds this man. I saw this, and I applaud this. And it would bring the guy to tears. And the reason I share a story is one of the guys mentioned that, you know, he was challenged with this idea that we have to live individually with God, only looking for his applause. But in relation to other people, we should be the one who wants to applaud others. In other words, stir them up to love and good deeds. And I was thinking, gosh, that sounds like the right way to live, to look and seek and expect the applause of God in my life, not try to draw it from others. But with others, I'm trying to do that for them just because I want to, you know. So.
That's good.
So, Jeff, your final thought.
Well, you all have summed it up well. I think that the little ticker in our heart that wants to be noticed, you know, Maslow is the, if you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you studied that in school, and he had a pyramid of the basic needs. At the bottom is air and water and food, and above that there's, we have a need for love and esteem and to know that we're noticed and for affirmation. I think God put that in us, to create in us a need to be noticed. And obviously that would put there not necessarily to be noticed by others, although we do need each other. But I think maybe God put that in there so that we would have a need to be noticed by him. And he wired us with this longing to want to be affirmed and to want to be noticed and to want to get the applause, to feel good. I've embraced that as something that is good. It's a quality that God created. And I think that if we really get excited about wanting to get the applause of God, that can be channeled in our life in a real positive way. So you all have said that in your comments. And on my website, I have some videos also that help communicate some of the key themes from the book. And I also have some content on just the subject of fasting, because that's becoming an area where there's a lot of questions. So I respect the group you've got, the audience you have, and I know that there are deep thinkers and they're mature walkers with God. I'd love to have any interaction or engagement, reach outs from them if they have any thoughts or ideas or questions. I'd love to hear from them at my website, divineapplause.com. And I just appreciate the privilege and the invitation to be part of your discussion tonight. So thank you, guys.
Oh, you're welcome. So that's great. They can go to your website and find the videos. Again, that was divineapplause.com?
Yes.
Okay, and if they want to get your book, where would you like them to purchase it from? From you, from Amazon, from a Christian bookstore? Where would you like them to get it?
Whatever is convenient for them, really. We ship books out of our office, and they can order on my website. But if they have a relationship with Amazon or they want a Kindle copy, I appreciate you asking. But I'm good with whatever serves them. You can only get the videos through me. So if they want a DVD, like it's for a group study, what we do is if you buy a book or buy anything, you'll get the group study and leader study guides in a PDF to go with it if you want to do it in a study format. So that's something you can get when you buy it on my website.
Great. Good. Jeff, thank you so much for doing this with us. This has just been fun having you with us, the campfire, and this conversation. And Sam and John, thank you again. So, all right. Good night, everybody. Good to be with you.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.